What's up, punks? It's Shinobi, and we are bringing you a special edition of Block Digest with guest Jeremy Rubin, who has inducted me into the CIA to start shilling op check template verify.
Hey, hey, thanks for having me on. Are those punks you reference CryptoPunks?
No, cypherpunks.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, how you doing today?
Doing great. Just enjoying another day on this fine rock.
A rock? That's what you're going to call this beautiful world? Just a rock?
Well, I guess so.
And I guess we have Fud popping in here. He's one of the co-hosts from the normal show. If you want to get involved with the discussion, Fud, we're going to dive into Jeremy's proposal for a new consensus rule, check template verify, and then also go down a little autism hole on reasoning about consensus changes in general.
Sounds good to me.
So I guess for anybody who has been living on a deserted island and has no idea what check template verify is, you want to give a brief rundown of that?
Yeah, sure. So today in Bitcoin, you have a coin and you get all the right keys and other things assembled and you've waited the right amount of time. You're able to spend that money however you want. So that UTXO, once you unlock it, you can put it into any other address that you want to. There's a concept called covenants, which are a little bit different from that. They say, once you unlock these funds, you can only put them into another specific kind of address if they're bound by a covenant. That can be used for a number of different really cool use cases, but I think it's best to think about it through a little bit of an analogy, which is if you think of every Bitcoin UTXO like a treasure chest, and normally treasure chests just have like gold coins in them. Peter Schiff or whatever. So you open up this treasure chest and then it's got gold coins and then you've got to put it into a new treasure chest. So you like open up some other set of treasure chests and you like pour them in. That's kind of how UTXOs work right now. But imagine one day you open up your treasure chest and then inside is like Jimi Hendrix's guitar. And you're like, well, crap, I can't like just break this up and like put it into a bunch of different boxes. Like, I really have to keep this together. And not only that, I shouldn't put it into like just any old box. Like I should put it into a guitar case because I don't want it to get like dinged up and damaged or whatever. So you could think that there's like a covenant that when you open up the treasure chest and you find Jimi Hendrix's guitar kind of wrapped in lush velvet padding or whatever, it's like, hey, like, please put this in another guitar case. So there'd be a covenant on how you can spend the contents of that UTXO. So a covenant in Bitcoin would be something kind of similar where you would say, okay, I have some coins that I opened up and they say, hey, these are special coins that have been earmarked for a specific purpose. Don't put them in just any old UTXO. It has to be one that only unlocks in this specific way. And these covenants are a general purpose concept, and they can go really, really far. Like you could imagine the highest form of the covenant would be like, we've embedded the entire Ethereum virtual machine inside of a covenant and all state transitions represent blocks in Ethereum or something like that. And then you'd have the entire state of Ethereum represented inside of that covenant. Maybe you've got like zero knowledge proofs going or whatever, but you'd be able to like carry the coins from thing to thing and you could peg in or peg out of it like a side chain or something like that. That would be like the craziest use case of evidence, like, you know, all the way to the max. For check template verify, it is a really, really, really simple version of covenants. So when you go to the wall, and I think Shinobi, you can get to this a little bit later, but when you go really all out with covenants, there are a lot of risks that you might be engendering. For check template verify, we talk only about the set of covenants where we know the entire set of things that we could want it to do in the future. So for example, if we wanted to have like an annuity contract we could use Check Template Verify to say, here is one Bitcoin and pay out 0.1 Bitcoin once a month for 10 months. And then that would be the type of thing that you could do with Check Template Verify. You couldn't do something that is a forever rule. It's just sort of like fixed, like, hey, we have some idea about some set of control flow that we want to have over these coins. We want the coins to go through that control flow. And then once it reaches the end of that process, the coins will be unencumbered by the covenant again.
Yeah, so it's like to kind of draw like another comparative analogy, like a UTXO in Bitcoin is like you standing in the middle of the woods. Like you can just go walk in literally any direction. But something like Check Template Verify is like being stuck on that path, like a walled in path that's roped off that you can't get out of. And you have to stay in that path until you get to the end of it. But then at that point, you can just walk off in whatever direction you want again.
Yep, that's another great metaphor. Oftentimes I'll describe like Check Template Verify and really Sapio, one of the tools I've been working on top of it, as defining commutes. And you could imagine on that path that there's like a series of like gates and things like that. And you have to like unlock them as you're going. And that's really what Check Template Verify is helping you define, is like it's this path, but also like the gates and things you have to open. And there could be some forks in the road, but ultimately you've got to exit the woods at some point.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is actually kind of what sold me on like CTV. Like when I first years ago, like came across the concept of a covenant and like started seeing developers talk about this, like my immediate reaction was just like, no, like this is a fungibility risk. It's a security risk. Like this would just break every design goal that Bitcoin is aspiring towards in terms of being like a fungible, programmable money. But that all results from the potential of like locking somebody in that infinite, like closed path where they can never escape. But with CTV, like having to know ahead of time and eventually terminate like that path, like it can't just keep going forever because you can't just magically have some prescient knowledge of the future into infinity. Like the inherent design prevents that risk.
Yeah. And I think there's sort of an important point because you can make quite long covenants if you wanted to. Like you could have your compiler running for an afternoon and compile like millions and millions of like turns on the path. But you have to know those ahead of time. And so you can't make these kind of covenants that like live forever in a way that self-perpetuates. The covenants have to kind of inherently be bound to whatever you could foresee.
Yeah, you know, like a worst case example covenant in my mind would be like, imagine putting a coin into an address where you have a one of two like script path where you have your key and say the government's, so that the government can just always arbitrarily seize people's Bitcoin, and you use a covenant to restrict like your key transferring those coins so that they could only ever be sent to a script like that where the government always has the ability to seize it. Like if a covenant scheme was too general, like you could just lock coins forever into a system like that, and the only way out of that would be a hard fork.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something where, you know, maybe we have like a little bit of disagreement on about like that threat model. From my perspective, I see it as like, well, as soon as the government goes bad and like does something like that, with or without covenants, like maybe you're kind of screwed. But the point that, you know, when we've spoken previously that you made to me, that I think, you know, is pretty solid, is like through democratic processes, you could eventually replace the bad government with a good government. And then you can get out from under those rules. But if you had covenants, like they would just be forever rules.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, to kind of go off in the weeds a little bit, like I think that is a massive systemic risk in terms of destabilizing Bitcoin incentives. Because if you look at something like a 51% attack, which is very difficult and unlikely in and of itself, all that can really accomplish is disrupting future transactions and winding back past ones that are near the tip, but also like censoring transactions, so like trying to stop that from getting into the chain. But if you introduce a covenant like that, a 51% attack can be it can be an extortion if done in the right way to push people into scripts like that. And you can just do that over and over, and whatever like amount of people you coerce into just buckling and complying with that, they're now permanently locked into that instead of the effect of like censoring per se going away when they stop the attack because it's getting expensive.
Yeah, it's a fair point, for sure. That there's like a, you know, concern of like if you're really like forcing people into these things. And I don't know if like Check Template Verify like really like helps with like the probability of a 51% attack, but it definitely helps with not introducing, because it's explicitly designed to not introduce any sort of recursive covenant. So you don't have the you don't really have to analyze when you're reviewing Check Template Verify like what things could happen with recursive covenants, because you can prove that they're not really possible with Check Template Verify.
Mm-hmm. So I guess do you want to get into like describing some of the giant list of use cases that you've built up since you started working on this? You have like the most formal presentation, like arguing for a consensus change, that I've ever seen in terms of explaining the structure of it, like the different applications that could be built with it.
I appreciate that. I've definitely taken a lot of effort in doing it. I think, you know, to peek behind the curtain at my own process, like this started in 2017 or something like that. I presented at Stanford on a bunch of different things you could do with covenants and different kinds of covenants that I thought were like relatively easy to implement inside of Bitcoin Core. And then some people really liked that. Other people just kind of like ignored it and were like, meh, covenants. I think you were probably in that boat at that time. And then, so I thought about it for a while. I was like, okay, well, like maybe I can implement covenants as just these big multi-sigs. And so I made the specification for how to do really big multi-sig pre-signing with ECDSA. And then I tried to, and this was in like 2018 or something, I tried to get people excited about that. And everybody's like, dude, like Schnorr is coming so soon. Like, why are you trying to do this multi-party ECDSA stuff? So then I was like, okay, well, like maybe I'll just get rid of this whole multi-party side of things and go for something that's just like a really simple opcode to do this. That would just be like, if I'm adding a new feature, what's the simplest thing I could add? People were still pretty opposed to covenants. So I was like, it's got to be really simple. I've got to be able to prove that it doesn't give you these like bad types of covenants, just the, you know, kind of good and reasonable use cases. And then I presented that at BitDevs in May 2019 and had a really like positive response to it. From there, I went ahead and sort of refined the idea, drilled down into like making sure the consensus, you know, goals were safe, presented it at a couple different venues along the way, and then like opened up a bib for it. And I think, when you say that I have like this like really formal presentation, I think the way that I've approached things is like, I kind of know, like, you know, in my head, how these things are all going to like shape up and work out in the long run. And I've known that to a certain degree for like a while, but at every turn I've kind of like told people like, hey, here's how this is going to work. And people are like, okay, I believe you. And I'm like, okay, they don't really believe me. And as you know, it's been boosts of confidence along the way to say, okay, well, I kind of figured somebody else is going to come up with how to actually do this or how to like build out the ecosystem. But I realize, no, I either have to like make the proof or I've got to make the ecosystem component. Let me go ahead and do that. And then I'll show how this works, you know, in a bigger and bigger ecosystem. And that grew from sort of just being an opcode with some slides about what you could do with it to, you know, simulations to, at current stage, like entire programming language environment where you can build Covenant smart contracts for a wide variety of use cases. And I think that that's really what you were asking about, like what the use cases are.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I should probably get into those, huh?
It makes sense to me.
All right. So one thing that I believe, and this is like a more general point about like Bitcoin upgrade design, is that you should have one thing, maybe not just one thing, but like there really should be some application in mind for that specific opcode. And that's the thing that you should really be like measuring the opcode by, like, does it actually work for that use case end to end? And then if you can meet that application, you know, then you analyze and figure out like, well, can I do a bunch of other cool stuff with it? And if I need to change a couple of things to get it to work a little bit better, like do they disadvantage that main use case? And for Check Template Verify, I had one major thing in mind as like this first order use case, which is congestion control for the network. So if you think about how Bitcoin works today, if you're a big Bitcoin business and you need to pay out, like, let's say like 10,000 people, Bitcoin kind of sucks for that because you've got to pay for a crap load of spot demand block space in order to pay out that many people. So it's going to be pretty expensive. If you're able to form maybe through like the Lightning Network, a link to them, potentially you could pay out that way. But I think for a wide variety of use cases, the Lightning Network doesn't really work. Like if you're like a company and you've got like 10,000 employees and you're trying to pay them payroll, that payroll might be coming out of your, you know, fundamental revenues. And so you might not have the capital to lock up in the Lightning Network in order to be able to pay your employees, you know, every 2 weeks. And so for those types of flows where it's like strongly polar and your employees might just always be like putting it into savings every month, so they might not be like spending out again. For those strongly polar flows, I think you actually really do need to be able to settle things on chain. And if you're a big business or, you know, a bank or exchange or something like that, it can be pretty harsh to be able to guarantee execution for that many transactions because they all have to go into a block. What Check Template Verify was designed to support is a model where you can confirm an unlimited number of future transactions with a single output. So what you can do is, you know, if you remember, I said these covenants are like treasure chests that you have to open. You've got to do something specific with the contents of them. Imagine a treasure chest that you open it up, and inside, kind of like those Matryoshka Russian nesting dolls, like inside the treasure chest, there's like two more treasure chests, and the instructions are just like, hey, please, like, you know, like, please now carry around these two treasure chests. You're like, what the heck? Like, why did I open a treasure chest for just like more treasure chests to be inside? But then you keep on going along. And then, you know, later you open up those other two. And then inside of those two, there's like another two. And then you've got like four treasure chests total. You just keep on opening them up until like eventually a treasure chest gets created for an individual user. And in the physical analogy, that's maybe a little bit confusing because you're like, isn't it just as heavy to like carry around like one treasure chest with like two treasure chests? But like you got to, you know, the analogy breaks a little bit. These are like, you know, imagine when you open up the treasure chest and take them out, they like expand to the size of the previous one, but they're like small before. So that's kind of what Check Template Verify is doing with the covenants, is like you commit to all the future UTXOs that you want to have created on chain, but you don't have to create them all at once. You just have the single container that gets put on, that gets put on chain to carry all of them. Where Check Template Verify is kind of like special and unique in how it's built, is you kind of have a an X-ray for these treasure chests where you can like check and see how many coins are actually inside at the end of the day. And you can say like, okay, this definitely contains enough gold, you know, in the analogy, you know, to pay everyone. So every individual user, when they see that single output get confirmed, they can verify that the payment was actually going to be sent to them in the future. So they're able to get a full confirmation on the receipt of those funds. They just need to go through the forest in order to unlock enough, you know, gates to reach their coin at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. And like, especially in, you know, a high fee environment, which the whole thesis of Bitcoin kind of depends on at this point, like that would become absolutely critical for those types of things. Because if you can't be efficient with block space and trade off that like waiting period by using a scheme like this for cheaper fees on the initial sender's part, then like that prices a lot of stuff out of ever touching the blockchain.
Absolutely. And it also gets into something called Jevons paradox, which is pretty cool. It's the notion that sometimes when things become more efficient to use, they become like more expensive because more people use them. You know, an example of this would be like electric lighting or something like that, where like it used to be like very expensive. And so like not there wasn't that much consumption of electricity. But now it's like so ubiquitous and easy to use, like everybody's using it all the time. So, you know, maybe you're consuming more of these things because they become more efficient overall. And this is relevant for, you know, congestion control, because ultimately, like the mempool is empty right now, like people aren't transacting, you know, so it's like pretty like fees are pretty low in Bitcoin, which isn't a good thing for like the long term health of the network. So what Check Template Verify is supposed to help with is it's supposed to help with both decreasing the costs for users when there are a lot of users, so making it more efficient, but also increasing the number of users. So like I would expect in the Check Template Verify world, like transactions would end up being more expensive for people, but they would be less expensive than if you didn't have Check Template Verify and the same number of users showed up. But that's where the paradox comes in, is like the users aren't going to show up until we have congestion control protocols to guarantee that you can actually clear payments without, you know, like relying on zero conf or something like that. So it's kind of like a little bit of a tricky argument where when you talk to like users, you have to, you know, tell them like, hey, this is actually really going to help you solve these problems long term. And it also solves like underlying issues for the Bitcoin network in terms of creating a much healthier backlog of fee paying transactions for miners. And it like decreases the fees that users are paying, but it increases the number of users. So it's kind of like one of these circular things where it's supposed to overall have a really good ecosystem impact.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, analogous to the history of Bitcoin being used as like a transactional medium. Like very early on, like that was happening all over the place. But then as the lack of efficiency in doing that started really coming to a head in reality, people stop doing that. And then you have the massive efficiency gain for that use case right now in the Lightning Network. And all of a sudden, that use transactionally is really taking off again.
Absolutely. And I think that that's where like there's also some other, you know, interesting things in how Check Template Verify interacts with the Lightning Network, where I think it should actually like really improve that. And I think the first, you know, part of that is, as I mentioned, like, for strongly polar flows, and what that means is like it's you're sending to somebody and then you send to them again and they're not sending any money out. That would be kind of like paying your employees. Like they might be sending a little bit out, but for the most part they're, you know, putting their money into savings or something like that. Check Template Verify is really helpful in decongesting the actual on-chain thing. And if those users are putting it into savings or whatever, or they're not really putting the money online for use, one of the really cool things is like they just can wait. They can just be sitting at the bottom of the mempool paying like, you know, minimal relay fees and waiting for either somebody else to pay for them to be expanded, you know, until they have to spend. And at the time that they do have to spend, it's not even that expensive for them to get the on-chain space. It's actually still pretty efficient. Then the last part where, you know, this is the thing that sort of gets into the, well, like, what are the bigger things that you can do? You can also do something we can talk more about called non-interactive lightning channels. Mm-hmm. Third party creates a channel for you inside potentially one of these trees. So you can imagine a world where you get paid out by your employer every month, but they pay you into a lightning channel they created for you. And you don't even have to clear on chain immediately in order to be able to use that. You can immediately start using that in the Lightning Network. So your funds, even though you haven't gotten the base layer UTXO expanded yet, you can immediately use them as a full-fledged channel in the Lightning Network, which I think is pretty tremendous for onboarding more liquidity.
Yeah, like effectively being able to, because like the whole security model of Lightning is until that funding transaction is actually confirmed on chain, like somebody could just double spend that and run away. But if you think about the guarantees that a congestion control system with CTV works, once that first little anchor is confirmed sufficiently, you can treat all the unconfirmed things in the future as confirmed.
Yep, exactly. And not just confirmed, like there's an even stronger property, like you know the exact TXID that will be coming in the future. So it's not just that you got the payments, that you know exactly what output you're going to have in the future.
Mm-hmm. So that can be usable for going like, hey, I want to put this in a Lightning channel with somebody. And even though it might be weeks before it actually confirms on chain, I can prove that it will.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, man. Like, do you actually want to like kind of go a little deeper into the mechanics of how that would work in terms of like transaction dependencies? And then after that, I want to pick your brain on your notion of a channel factory implementation built on this.
Yeah, sure. What do you mean by transaction dependencies, though?
I mean, just like the specific way that committing to that output with OpsCTV allows it to connect to like a proper funding transaction and the pre-signed transactions in terms of multi-sig that that you're going to need to interact with the other channel party.
Gotcha. Yeah. So in Check Template Verify, and this gets in a little bit to the next topic, but there's a property that I like to call, which is like design specificity, which is like how specific is this design to solving the problem? Like, are there multiple solutions or is this like really the only way to solve it? And for Check Template Verify, I think it's actually like, given the goal, is to be able to perfectly predict an exact transaction that will be able to be broadcast to the network in the future, so that you can know that the outputs exist in the future. There's only like a couple different ways that you can actually do that. And the main way is to just commit to all of the transaction data inside of the script that you're going to see in the future, except for the specific coin that's being moved. And the reason why you can't commit to the specific coin is you have a hash cycle. So like the script commits to the next transaction, if that also committed to the output, then you wouldn't be able to create that script because the output contains the script. So it's sort of like one of these things where, you know, if you're hashing the thing that you're trying to hash, and you would break the identity. So you hash absolutely everything except for that. And what that enables you to do is to say, okay, like the next transaction that is being spent from this coin must have exactly this version, exactly this lock time, exactly this number of outputs, exactly these outputs, exactly this number of inputs, exactly the sequences on these inputs, but not the specific outputs. I forget if there's any other fields, like exactly the script sigs, that are there as well. So you commit to all the data that would have to be there that could potentially modify the transaction ID. And there's nothing else, so long as there's only one input per transaction, you can guarantee provably that there's no other way that that transaction could be spent. And so that gives you sufficient surety that there's no other way. When you look at a base transaction, what you say is, okay, I've got some like leaf node that's like actually paying me. And then you look at the parent and you're like, this parent's unconfirmed. What the heck? Like, I shouldn't treat this as confirmed. However, let me check. And you see the script for that transaction paying out is actually hash check template verify. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, because it's hash check template verify and the transaction that's my leaf node is matches that hash, this is the only way that that output could ever be spent. And then you go up another level and you do the same thing again. And you go up another level and then recursively, kind of inductively yield up till you reach all the way into that leaf node or into that root node from the leaf node. And then you say, okay, well, the one that actually is confirmed on chain, so I don't have to worry about if it has any, you know, covenant or anything, it's like actually just confirmed in a block, that pays to the check template verify, which pays to that hash, which goes to that transaction, which goes to that hash, which goes, so on and so forth. So then you've proven to yourself that the funds are as good as fully confirmed, as long as you check that your node would treat all of those transactions as valid in the future. So like if the transaction is like, you know, like 10 megabytes, you'd be like, okay, that's not a valid transaction. That can't go into a block. But as long as it's meeting, you know, your general rules for block inclusion and mempool inclusion, then you should treat it as fully confirmed.
Yep. And so how does this let things like congestion trees become channel factories?
Yeah. So there are a couple different parts. The general concept of a channel factory, there's a lot of different designs for that kind of thing. I think as a first component, let's talk about what a non-interactive channel is, because that's something that you can do outside of one of these congestion control trees, just between a couple participants. The simplest version to imagine is, let's say that I go up to a coffee shop and they've got a QR code and they're like, yeah, you can pay us in Lightning, but I don't have a route to them. I like can't pay them through Lightning. And they're like, well, that's a bummer. Why don't you open a Lightning channel to us and put like $100 on it, because you're going to come here every day. And you're like, all right, that's a pretty good idea. Let me open up a channel with $100 on it to you. And then you go to the barista and you're like, can you open up the channel? They're like, oh, bro, like our keys are offline. Like we don't sign transactions. And you're like, wait, but like, how am I supposed to open the channel to you? So what you can do with Check Template Verify is you could say, okay, I am going to take a public key that you do have on your QR code. Then I'm going to create a channel where the default thing that happens after you go through all of the timeout periods is that I get my $100 back. But I'm able to, because I've got your key and I mix my key in, I'm able to sign one half of a multi-sig thing and give you more money. So we're just imagining in a like in a single direction channel right now. We're not worrying about like the whole protocol. I first sign and I say, okay, I've got two options. Either two of two, we can sign off and we can close the channel, or I can begin a claim and I can say, hey, the channel is dead. And then after 2 weeks after I claim that the channel is dead, then I can claim back the $100. Or at any time, my coffee shop can broadcast any other transaction that I've signed to them. So you can imagine as a single direction channel, I sign first that I now have $95 and they've got $5. Then I, you know, I sign that, you know, I buy coffee for some friends and now it's like $25.75, so on and so forth. I keep signing better and better half transactions. And then when I go to close the channel, the barista has like 2 weeks to go get their key off of cold storage and then close the channel with the actual like settled state, but they never had to have their key online in order to create that channel. So that's a non-interactive channel.
Real quick, just to contextualize that, it's kind of like an improvement on the original decrementing time lock, like one-way channel, like where you would have that transaction off in the future where you can claim 100% of your money back. And you just give, like you were saying in this scheme, like one that sends more money and then more money and then more money.
Yeah.
But each one would decrement the time lock so that eventually that window of time where the other side has to claim their funds gets closer and closer. But here you get the same kind of dynamic without that decrementing time lock, like that the time doesn't start until I go to like claim money back. And then exactly. You have the normal kind of channel update logic of Lightning there.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, like I think the important, you know, parts to keep in mind is like when you do actually want to run this as like a full fledged like Lightning like channel, you would need to plug in an entire, you know, like revocable, you know, Lightning channel specification in there. You could also use something like AnyPrev out there as well. You can do whatever you want for that update protocol. This is just sort of giving you a sense of what the backbone is of it and why it's a non-interactive channel, because one of the parties can verify the entire channel setup without having any signing key online. So they're sort of non-interactive from their perspective. And just to make it, you know, make the picture full, but Because I think going into like the specifics of like the actual Lightning channel replication protocol, it's just the same as what Lightning is doing. So like that's not, you know, like that relevant for this context. But what is more relevant is now imagine that you're withdrawing from an exchange and you check a box that says pair me with somebody who wants to open a Lightning channel as well. And then you go offline. Now that exchange, they can actually set up a channel for you with somebody else non-interactively. And both sides of that withdrawal can be non-interactive. So neither side, it can be entirely third party set up. And that's a pretty big concept because it means that like somebody else could open channels for you.
Mm-hmm. Which makes the whole kind of needing to pair liquidity dynamic and Lightning a lot less of a pain. Like that's just something that can happen in the background and you come back online and then, oh, like we can work with this. We could potentially have schemes to turn it into a full-on interactive channel, like, but that initial liquidity pairing just got done while I was shopping and I didn't have to care about it.
Yeah, and the use cases for this are like huge. Like you could imagine a world where everybody makes all of their payments like this all the time. Because if you pay somebody and you've got an address, you know, like a key for them that you're going to pay to, you can always open it up as like a, you know, refundable channel where it's like, yeah, by default, you've got a multi-sig where you can just cooperate with them to pay them, or they can claim the funds out after 2 weeks or whatever. But it could also just be a channel open. So you could imagine this as being a thing that creates like a huge amount of new liquidity for the Lightning Network. Obviously, if somebody really doesn't want like their money to be locked up with some time constraint, they would specify that. But this would allow you to just like by default open up channels to people instead of just, you know, basic payments.
Mm-hmm. But you know, in the tree or congestion tree system, though, it's like every branch from the root can do its own thing. Like, you yep. know, I can be doing a channel setup like this in the same transaction where you're just going further towards unilaterally claiming yours on chain.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's what, you know, like all these things, like you should make sure that they're opt-in, like you shouldn't do things that people like don't want. But there are certain things that you can do that like are okay. Like somebody wants to pay you to an address and you're free to put whatever you want into that address. And one of the really cool use cases, I think, is like, let's say you are going to a business and they're like, you know, ha ha ha, we're never going to support the Lightning Network because it's evil or whatever, you know, I don't know. So you're like, okay, like what if I want to open up a channel from this exchange? What if I want to open up like 10,000 channels out of this exchange? I can just generate the address and tell them to pay the correct amount of coins to that address. And then I can open up channels that way. They don't even have to have any knowledge about how Lightning works in order for that to work. They just need to know how to pay an address the correct amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's like pretty like enormous use case in that regard. And then when you take that concept of that non-interactive channel and you nest it inside of that congestion control tree, that's where you start getting a lot more power because now you can open up as many channels as you want in, you know, a constant amount of block space.
Yep.
I guess that sort of leads to the channel factory, which is like kind of like an additional mm-hmm. concept on top of that. So for channel factories, the main thing that you're improving on with Check Template Verify over the status quo is the setup phase, because currently in a channel factory, you have to have all the people who are participating in that channel factory be online at the time of the channel factory's creation. With Check Template Verify, you can then make it a non-interactive setup. But for the actual like operation of the channel factory, there's like a couple different designs that people talk about. And there's like the concept of like the any prev out style ones. And I think that those are actually still pretty desirable because they handle the multi-party use cases a lot better for like the revocable states. The concept there would be that in every like interior node, so like let's say you start with like a single thing and then you split it into groups of four, and then each group of four splits into another group of four, et cetera, until you reach the leaf nodes. All those nodes in the middle, those could have a taproot aggregated key. And then if everybody signs on an update to the subleaf, you could have like, let's say a 2 week delay between every leaf expansion. And what that would let you do is that would let you have inside of those multi-party channels that kind of like hierarchically go up the tree. And then that would allow you to have sort of like larger Lightning channel rebalances across the tree. But it definitely gets a little bit more complicated that way. If you don't have something like any Prevote, the thing that I think is really interesting, but you do have Chick Template Verify, is something that people are calling like coin pools, which is where you have a single UTXO that is representing a number of people, and anybody who gets like really upset, they can like pull out their coin at any time. But if everybody's agreeing, there's like some top level key where you can then broadcast a transaction that changes all the balances for everyone. And then maybe like pays some people externally or takes in some new users internally. So you can kind of think of it as like that game, like Katamari, where it's just like this, like, you know, big ball rolling around, you know, picking up whatever it can. So you're picking up all this stuff, all these different users. And then like, you've got this UTXO and like, let's say you've got like, you know, 100 people in it. And then you, let's say once a day, do a transaction on chain, and then you update everybody's balances once a day. Like that could be a type of model that you would have for these coin pools. And then when you do that update, you like close out everybody's like daily payments. Where that's cool is like those endpoints in that pool can also be Lightning channels. And then you only update the top node on chain every single time, you know, like let's say once a day or whatever. But then for like just regular payments, you don't really need to do anything. Because for like regular payments, you've got the Lightning network. So you're just doing most of your transacting that way. It's only when your Lightning channels get sort of like, you know, you either need to go on chain or you need to do something else that you actually have to like open up the pool.
Mm-hmm. So pretty much just like you have like the same logic of the congestion tree. You have this guaranteed thing at the root, except here, everybody can just agree to change that. And that just funds out to Lightning channels. And so the only purpose mm-hmm. of transacting on chain is just to rearrange liquidity. Like I want to close my channel with you and open one with FUD here, or I want to rebalance like some liquidity between two different channels and splice some from here over to there. And those are the only aggregate things happening on chain.
Exactly. And that sort of shifts from just like the regular congestion control tree view where like, yeah, you eventually want to go on chain, to this where like potentially you never have to go on chain. And what's kind of neat about how the congestion control trees work is because it's a like recursive data structure, essentially. When you do decide to go on chain, you can go on chain like level by level by level until you narrow into a group that's able to like actually agree. So let's say that you've got like 100 mm-hmm. people, and then you split into groups of 25. 4 happens to be like kind of optimal for a lot of these things. Don't ask why. It's like kind of an involved, you know, like you got to do the math out. But like you split from 100 to, yeah, I can show you the math later. But you split from like 100 to groups of 25, and then from 25 to groups of like, I don't know, like 6 or something like that, right? So if you're splitting that way, like imagine there's one person who cheated. Okay, you've got to do one transaction with 4 outputs, and then 75%, 75 out of 100 of the you know, participants like don't have to do anything else because the rest of the people are all okay, right? Mm-hmm. Their group of 25 is still fine, and they could even, if they want to, they could combine again with the other, you know, people and, you know, re-zip their pool back together, or they can just continue operating independently after that point. And then the group of 25, well, they still got one bad person. So they've got to split into the 4 groups of 6, right? And then for 18 of those people, they don't have to do anything else, right? Because their thing is good. They could re-zip with people higher up, re-zip with themselves. They could do whatever they want to do or just operate their pool as is. But then there's one group of 6, and then that group of 6 has to do like a transaction or two in order to like get rid of the final person, right?
I just have to go down a tangent hole here that is going to shift completely from the consensus discussion and features we've been having. But this exact dynamic, I think, implies a requirement in order to minimize disruption for channel factories that I don't think a lot of people want to hear in this space. And that's some form of reputational system. Because if I get into a structure like this, I'm going to want to know that I can keep the bulk of my money down tree paths that have people with a history of not being disruptive like that. And you know what I mean? I'm going to think differently about getting into a factory that has some kind of system like that versus one that doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are some pretty like interesting decentralized like reputation schemes that you could do. Like one is just sort of like it's kind of like a Lindian cuckoo hashing. If I had to like try and describe it in terms that are probably like not very descriptive to other people, but would be very descriptive to like at least one person. In that, like, you can imagine that you're in these coin pools and then you keep on getting kicked out because they're like small ones. Like, let's say you're trying to group with like five people and then they keep on dying, right? So you're okay, you try again. And then eventually you get one that's like starting to last for a while, right? And then you're like, okay, well, this one's been alive. Other people can receive a proof that that thing that you have is actually a coin pool and that it has been alive for a while. And so then they're like, okay, well, like that coin pool, we can see its track record in history and it's been working okay. Well, now that you've leveled up and you've been able to stay alive for a month, now you can join the, you know, like the 1 month club, and you could pool up with like somebody else who's been around for a month with another five person thing. And then your 10 person, or maybe you group two groups of four just to keep her kind of sane. So then you get like 20, and then you're like, okay, well, like who else can I you know, who else can I pool with who's now been a group of 20 for at least a year? And then you can kind of keep on leveling up way until naturally you find peers who like through this kind of like Lindian thing have been like living for a while and been like decent. And that discovery can happen just based on like the on-chain data. But it's a little bit like, you know, like I don't love that as like a trust, you know, and reputation mechanism. Like you also can bootstrap that by saying like, well, these are five people who like I get beers with every week, and that's probably good enough for me.
But it has a lot of implications if you really take it to the extreme of like literally trying to get the whole planet on Bitcoin so they can transact with it, because that kind of brings into question the viability of pools that small.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I think it's also something I've been seeing a lot from some of the Lightning people that like they view that like long term, the reputation markets are going to be really important for things like borrowing liquidity. That like if you you know, take a liquidity offer and it's not high reputation, that you're just going to get burned. And I think that yeah, you probably end up having that kind of thing develop. I don't love that. I would rather have like more baseline scalability, but I do think that that is you know, where it leads to, that you do need to have some kind of you know, some kind of hope that your counterparties are going to be high performance.
So I guess, do you want to get into any of the other designs for applications you have on this, or maybe kind of get into how you've rewired my brain thinking about any prev out?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just do like the you know, sampler pack of like things you can do. You can do all sorts of like DeFi related things. So like derivatives for like put options, call options, like kind of similar to like discrete log contracts. You can do things like vaults where you're setting up some kind of annuity to yourself that you can cancel. And so you can think of it as like a middle layer between like really deep cold storage and hot storage, where it's like on your phone, but it's like a middle layer where you can either pump the funds to like really deep storage, or once a month you get like a portion of it on your mobile phone. And then that can be, because of the non-interactivity, really useful for like one time setting up like really, really cold keys that like you absolutely can only get to in an emergency, which I think is something that's a little bit broken in the current conceptualization of like cold storage, which you still kind of have to regularly access cold storage to access your funds. This would be a model where you know, your deep cold storage could actually be like pretty inconvenient to get to, but you'd still be able to get occasional liquidity on your money. You can do lots of things, like it fixes some of the bugs that we've seen on like sidechain protocols. So like you know, Blockstream had this issue with like rolling over the funds on their federated sidechain peg-ins. This would fix that because you'd be able to peg funds in, and then they wouldn't expire. And on Blockstream Liquid, you have to like move the funds like once a month or something like that. And they weren't doing that. This would eliminate the need for having to move the funds regularly. They would just be able to sit where they are until they're needed. So there's like tons and tons of stuff that like that you can use this for. One of the main critiques that's been lobbed at Check Template Verify is like, you can't really do anything with it. It's like useless. You just designed it to do this like one thing really well. And I think that that's probably like, you know, it's probably my fault in like how I've like pitched it and presented it to an extent where like I've shown it accomplishing the thing that I wanted to accomplish really well. That's where like Stapio exists now to like really show people like actually you can pretty much design like whatever you want with it. You know, there's like maybe, you know, as long as you're not like not wanting like crazy things, like it is pretty powerful for being able to design all sorts of like really cool Bitcoin smart contract. And I think it's like more than enough for like the Bitcoin community to chew on for like a decade of like, you know, building cool stuff. So like that's why I'm pretty excited about getting it out there.
Because like some of the like criticism that got thrown your way by people like Greg Maxwell was kind of just like, it doesn't look generalized enough. Like, are you sure there isn't a way to do this that's more generalizable?
Yeah, it's definitely a good critique. Like, we should always be looking for things that are like, you know, more flexible or general or whatever. I think in the case of Check Template Verify, it's tough because we have like people who are like like you really don't want general purpose covenants. And so if you design something that's like a bit more general, well, like what are you going to get? General purpose covenants. And so Check Template Verify, you know, was sort of designed to be like very tolerable and acceptable. And it's really kind of like a miracle of like tooling that you're able to like build really complicated and like compelling smart contracts with it. But it definitely does look like not very flexible or useful. I think where it's also interesting is like the design of it is like really, really tight. So Greg and AJ recently posted on the mailing list this new thing, which is like called Tapleaf Update Verify. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to describe how you could use it for like similar things to like Coinpool that I was describing before. And then when you use their design, you end up having a limitation on the number of keys you can use it with. I think you're limited to like 30 people maximum, which as we talked about with the reputation stuff, like might not be the biggest deal. But that's with like a very large, like, you know, compilation overhead to like verify this, like, you know, 2 to the 30th, you know, property holds. So you got to do a lot of computation to like build those. But then, you know, if you go and count all the bytes for like doing the things that you're doing, it turns out like the witness sizes get really bad for that. And because the witness sizes end up being really bad, you end up using more bytes overall in the Tapleaf Update Verify version of things than you do in the Check Template Verify version. Even though you're doing like more transactions in Check Template Verify, all of the witnesses are basically blank. It's just like the transaction itself is the witness. And so it ends up being really, really efficient for a lot of those use cases. So it's kind of like, it's just like there's like a this like zen of the Check Template Verify way. And like if you like let go of your like pretenses and prejudices and try and build the thing in the Check Template Verify way, like you can probably build something that you're going to be pretty happy with. And then when you hold yourself to that design constraint, you actually might be happier with it than if you just tried to design it in the straightforward and obvious way, like you know, give me the thing I want, because it ends up being really efficient because you're pre-compiling all the state transitions.
Mm-hmm. Like, I still honestly haven't had the time to really look through the Tapleaf update proposal and really like think about it, but like that kind of just brings me back, like, you know, we've talked before, you were trying to get Check Template Verify kind of as a subset of TapScript from the very beginning. And that kind of got pushed out just to not wanting to bundle too many things together at once in the Taproot update.
Yeah, so it was an unholy union in a couple different ways. So at first, you know, I was like, oh, like, you know, there's Taproot looks like it's going to be close to done. So like, let's like, here's a new opcode, and like, why don't we just like ship this all at once? You know, it's like, and then I, you know, learned a little bit more about how bundling things can be really bad. And that's bad. Like, people have like brought up different reasons, and, you know, people, you know, have different rejections of it. But honestly, it was kind of like the right thing to do. And even now that Taproot is activated, that doesn't change how I think that Check Template Verify should be deployed. And the reasoning is a few. One is, like, if you bundle changes, like, somebody might really hate Taproot, but really like Check Template Verify, and therefore accept Taproot in order to get Check Template Verify. That I think is kind of like not a great dynamic to have. It's actually one of the things, I know you mentioned earlier that like Taproot was like a decent process because, you know, we got something that is like better than just Schnorr or just Mast. We got Taproot, but it's also kind of like it was a bundling, right? Like, there are people who probably only act Taproot because they wanted Mast, and people who probably only act Taproot because they wanted Schnorr, but like didn't care about the other side. So generally it's good not to bundle things unless there's a really compelling reason. And there wasn't a super compelling reason to bundle Check Template Verify with Taproot other than like we're doing them at the same time. The other dynamic that went into that was I started getting really aggressive about counting the number of bytes that was gonna be used if you use Check Template Verify. And what I realized was that Bare script for a wide variety of use cases would be like way more efficient, because you've got these really small transactions that are like 150 bytes or something like that, and then you're dedicating 32 bytes in like a, you know, Taproot script expansion, actually like a bit more, like 64 bytes I think to expand the Taproot branch out. And it's like, oh, like that's like a pretty hefty, because it's like, you know, it's like a third of the transaction or whatever. And so I was like, you know, probably makes sense to allow Bare script for the cases where we really care about chain bandwidth. So that was like one aspect of that as well. And then I also felt, and the community kind of rejected this, but I felt that given that Check Template Verify is like ultimately like code wise and conceptually like very, very simple, it doesn't really let you do anything more than pre-signed transactions let you do, just with a better trust model. I felt like, you know, there's actually a decent chance that like Check Template Verify is like ready to go before Taproot is. I wanted to make some changes to Taproot actually for Check Template Verify, because there was a way that I could fix some of the issues with the efficiency, but only if they came as a soft fork, or as a change to the Taproot specification. And the messaging I got was like, oh, well, Taproot's like already like too close to completion to like change anything about like how we serialize like the Merkle trees or anything. So it's like, okay, well, I can't, you know, get the benefit that way. That would give you the compelling reason for them to go together. It should be a separate thing. And also it's like a really simple separate thing. So maybe there's a chance that like the review process for Check Template Verify can proceed completely independently of Taproot, and maybe even, you know, beat Taproot into inclusion. I think that was always possible, but the community rejected it kind of on principle that like, no, we want to have all eyes on focusing on Taproot right now. And, you know, we can't even think about any other things before we finish that. And it's like, okay, like, you know, that's fair, but I'm still going to do my thing and I'm still going to advance this in the meantime, because I don't want to wait, you know, like once Taproot gets activated, then for it to be another, you know, period of like many years before we get, you know, Check Template Verify. Like, I want Check Template Verify to always be like on the cusp of being ready to go, so that when the soonest window is, that it actually feels like the community has sufficiently adopted it and like, you know, signaled for it that it actually can go through.
And, you know, we've had plenty of discussions about my thoughts on ordering things, especially related to any prev out. And I think you kind of just have me completely rethinking this kind of focus, like, that made me realize I've always had about just like assuming in order that things should happen in. And like lately you've just got me questioning, well, why?
Yeah. I mean, I think like one of the things that is maybe useful for people to think about in Bitcoin is like ossification and urgency. I'm personally of the opinion that like I don't think ossification can like ever really happen totally, because I think there's always like threats that come up and we have to respond to those threats. Like, for example, for like privacy, I think we're gonna need some like very big changes, you know, in the long run, but we're waiting for the technology to mature to that point. But like, I don't think there'll be a point where we're like, oh, well, like we're okay with like the level of like privacy right now because we've ossified. It's like, no, I want to make privacy better. So the urgency side, it's sort of, if you imagine like the like bar diagram of like when things are like happening, like if you had like one really big change that was going to take like 3 years to do, and you decided that was a thing, but you had like a bunch of like smaller changes that were like lesser impact, but you could get today, the overall like integral of like benefit to Bitcoiners by focusing on things that you can do, like in doing them like when you can do them, you actually might be accruing more benefit to the Bitcoin ecosystem overall. And these are things that people really struggle with. And that's why, like for Check Template Verify, when I think it has like such a big impact on scalability, privacy, self-custody, and decentralization, it's like I really think we should be trying to get these things like as soon as possible, because it takes a really long time for us to like deploy and be ready. And we already have like an unacceptable number of users who are just like tied to like platforms like Coinbase, because it's like the easiest thing for them to do in terms of self-custody. Like that to me indicates that we need to like really innovate on the self-custody side, for example.
But it's just, you know, like in terms of assessing like upgrades though, like I have like been so focused on APO just because of the state management issues and the need to generalize like channel update constructs, and how I saw like APO and L2 built on that as the solution there. And I still think it does completely solve the state management issue, but you know, you brought up a lot of concerns about too many participants involved or tied to a single transaction, and needing to update things, like APO not going far enough in terms of generalizing like what a sig hash can make a signature commit to, and how flexible that is between a lot of people, that like APO and L2 might not in and of themselves really solve all the issues of generalizing a channel update mechanism.
Yeah, so I think it's definitely true. This is a point that was, you know, I sort of observed through like Rusty Russell and AJ, is that if you want to actually do these like big multi-party channels using any private, even I think for the issue of like two-party, one of the areas where Bitcoin really has poor product market fit is the API for paying fees, which is kind of funny, because that's like the main thing that Bitcoin should excel at, is like convincing users to pay miners fees, right? Like if Bitcoin doesn't have product market fit for like transactions being useful, like Bitcoin's gonna die. So like there has to be like some product market fit, but we actually make it really difficult for people to pay fees. Right now, there's three ways that people pay fees on the network, in sort of broad strokes. I guess there's also a fourth way that we don't like to talk about. But so the first way that people pay fees is through guessing the correct amount of fees. They make a transaction, and you know, there's not like you know, they've got some estimators or whatever, so they figured out like, okay, it's probably like this many sats per Vbyte that I've got to pay. They pay that amount, and then their transaction either goes through or doesn't go through. That's like way one. Way two is that people do replace by fee. So they issue a transaction, they didn't guess correctly, and then they wait for a little bit, and then they issue the same transaction spends, like the same coins are being spent, but then they like decrease the amount being received into the change address, and then that pays more fees to the network. And then as long as they're paying you know, like more overall, and you know, more fee rate as well, then the network accepts it. And that way is like interesting, but like really problematic for a number of applications. You know, like some people really like to do things with zero conf, for example, and that's really bad for, you know, that if you're getting your TXIDs changed out because somebody's doing replace by fee. And then, I think that happens to be fine though. You know, like it's not guaranteed by the network anyways. Then there's issues around like if you're doing a batch payment, which is good because we like batch payments, they improve the efficiency of the network. But then if in the process of doing that batch payment, like you have like 100 users getting paid, then when you go to do a replace by fee, you have to pay more fee for every single user inside of that batch. And then that can be like a lot of extra fees that you're paying, and updating that, you know, more than once, that leads to you paying a quadratic amount of fees more, right? Because you're paying like kind of like times n, and then you got to do times n again. So as you're like batching with like more people, you end up paying, you know, the square of that, which is not good. And then there's also child pays for parent, which is where you either have an additional output and or a change address, and then you spend from that with a higher fee rate in order to like bump, you know, the fees of that transaction. Those are kind of, and then the fourth way that we don't like to talk about is like you bribe a miner to accept your transaction. So we don't like that for obvious reasons. Well, I guess the fifth way would also be that like you're running Lou Junior's Bitcoin knots as a miner, and then you have transaction priority for having been in the mempool for a long time or something. But that was removed from Bitcoin Core a while ago. So across all five of those types of ways that people are paying fees to miners, they all require it to fuck with your transaction flow. Like every one of those, the transaction that you're doing gets impacted by how you're paying fees for that transaction. And that makes sense in terms of like you're piggybacking it along. But then when you go and try and do like a channel protocol where it's multi-party, which means you can't do things like replace by fee. If you want to do things like child pays for parent, you would need an output per user in order for each user to be able to properly, you know, have their thing. It just leads to like enormous waste and excess. And so what has been proposed is that you would have maybe some way of like bundling transactions a little bit differently so that you could like in channel updates, you could dynamically add fees without having to pre-commit to how you're going to be doing it. And then that would allow you to save some space. But in order to have the sig hash modes for that to work, you would need to like have different sig hash flags than would exist even with any prev out. And so any prev out, well, it does work for like the state management issue. It does not work for the getting the thing into the mempool issue.
Mm-hmm. And so just to try
as far
to,
as
like,
I can tell.
Really simplify that, it's like, because like you can't fully customize what parts of the transaction a signature commits to, like that's where all of these restrictions come from. Like I can't just take an existing like multi-party transaction and make it flexible enough that like I can change my output and only my output without making that signature invalid because I'm impatient and I want to up my fees and get this done with.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like that kind of opens in my head a whole new door, and like I'm starting to really think about APO more like the original MAST proposal, which if we had just rushed and implemented like that, it would have caused all kinds of dominoes and slowdowns for the adoption and design of the improved version of it, which is Taproot. And you know, that really came down from just thinking about Schnorr and thinking about MAST and realizing that the cryptographic nature of Schnorr allowed you to privately commit to a MAST tree with that default case of not revealing it. And like that, taking the time and really thinking through like what are we trying to solve here, like led to realizing like that this just makes sense. Like it's a privacy gain, it's an efficiency gain, it simplifies a lot of things. And I'm starting to think about APO in those same lines. Like, why should we just rush to like get something out right now as like a solution to all of these problems? And it's like, well, wait a minute. It doesn't solve all of those problems. Just one of them.
Yeah, I mean, we've done this before. Like, I think I was just arguing on Twitter with Dennis about this, like something where he was like, SegWit was lightning and Taproot is smart contracts. Like, Taproot is like the biggest thing. It's even bigger than SegWit was. And I was like, wait a minute. Well, like, you know, like, first of all, like, SegWit isn't, you know, Lightning, like it helped with Lightning, but like check sequence verify also helped with Lightning. And also, wait up
CLTV.
a minute. There's also like, we also now need like any prev out for Lightning. So it's like, you can't say that like SegWit was Lightning, like, because we require, like, we didn't nail down every aspect of what we wanted channel protocols to do. Like, there's more things that we want them to be able to accomplish. And we learned things about like how watchtowers should work, and how, you know, like, so at least from my perspective, like, we really want to try and get these things end to end as much as possible, so that we're not, you know, building something and then trying to figure out if it actually solves the problem. We want to actually solve the problem and see that end to end before we advance the solutions. I happen to not agree with you about Taproot, but that's like a whole separate discussion. But I agree with like the principle that you're synthesizing out of it.
And I mean, it's, you know, I just feel like, you know, people like Chris DeRose used to troll about this all the time. And I feel like we're getting to that point where reality is starting to emulate some of the things that he trolled about. Like, the actual, like, social dynamic of beyond developers, like assessing consensus changes about reasoning through what they are and are not doing. Like, it really is just starting to resemble like political cheerleading. And I don't think that that's a really healthy thing because, like, in my mind, Bitcoin needs to get as much safe flexibility as it can. And then it needs to ossify. Because if this doesn't ossify, then what you're inevitably looking at is something with some kind of like formalized process beyond changing it. And we've just undermined Bitcoin here, if that comes to pass. And I think like right now is the most critical time in the world to be thinking through like what can we get that's most flexible but still safe, and let's get it in there. Because if the entire theory of ossification is right, we are at the start of that massive exponential growth phase that will accelerate that.
Yeah, if I could make one point about the whole ossification thing, because it sort of like is an argument sometimes people will make against like proceeding with check template verify now. And the point that I would make is people are like, oh, well, like we only have one shot to like ever implement covenants correctly. It's like, okay, I agree that we can't implement it like wrong, right? Like if there's a hole in it, but like check template verify doesn't like hurt another covenant proposal if somebody like has something better that comes along like in a couple years. But certainly, like if we don't do anything, then it's bad to like wait a couple more years to like do like changes more aggressively. Like I think it's better to do things that we think are safe and like have an opportunity to learn from. And like the ossification happens as a function of time, not as a function of like how many things we've already changed.
But it's like
So.
you know what I mean though? It's like they're like little camps for like every proposed change. Like, you know, no offense to you, like you've kind of swayed my thinking a lot, but like that is how I perceived everybody pushing for OpsCTV. And like in reaction to that, it's the same kind of thing going on for APO now. And like even cross input signature aggregation, which I want to get into in a little bit. I got kind of drunk last night and just crashed a room on CISA and got very trollish about issues I see with that. But like people need to be reaching out outside of that group of like whatever feature they're cheerleading about and actually have dialogue and actually like come to the table with the possibility in mind that maybe the way my little group is thinking about things outside of it, maybe it's wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that one of the areas where I see that having happened in like Taproot, for example, was the assumption that like it's going to be like really common that there's a case in a script where like people cooperate. Because to me, that seems like something that is a pretty big assumption and like not one that like I hold in the contracts that like I'm writing. I actually think that like a lot of the time you're going to be doing contested closes because I want that side to work really well. I mean, if that's what you're doing always, like maybe that's problematic, but like I don't always see it as like in every case you're going to be able to multi-sig out, especially given that at a certain point in, you know, already we're going to have like way more contracts than you have block space. So kind of through like a selection bias, you're probably going to see on chain a lot of contested closes and off chain like not a lot of contested closes.
I
Because if you
hadn't
can
even
agree
thought
with your
about that.
counterparty, like if you can agree with your counterparty, then why would you close your channel? Like if your Lightning channel is still online, it's like why would you pay like several hundred dollars to like close it when you could just like rebalance your liquidity? So that's where I'm like kind of skeptical that like the things that we'll see on chain to me seem like it'd be like really heavily biased towards like not the shared key path. But that's again, it's like an assumption and one that like the people who, you know, and I'm okay with it in terms of like a design goal, but that's why I think I'm not as like gung-ho about like the Taproot improvement over like Mast with Schnorr inside of it as you might be. But it's like okay, yeah, you know, it's cool. Like I hopefully it incentivizes people to have good behavior is sort of my feeling on it. But absolutely communicating like what are the concepts and assumptions that we're making when we're designing these things is something that's really critical. I've tried to cast like a pretty wide net for like Check Template Verify in terms of like who can be a part of the club or community. You know, I've been like asking people and trying to get people to engage, but I've definitely felt like that there's a lot of resistance to like want to even think about it. And so the club that sort of formed is naturally this group of people who like were willing to think about other things than Taproot before Taproot activates.
But you know, to go back to the Lightning side of things, like I hadn't really considered that in that way before. Like that is a very good point. But another thing to think about, especially in high fee environments, like even if your counterparty will be cooperative off-chain, maybe they don't want to cooperate in terms of like going on chain, like when you
Yeah, and
want to.
it's also kind of like a funny thing because you're making the going on chain case more expensive, which is already a case where you're being charged. So you're making the case where it's already a bad day for you even worse, right? It's like getting kicked while you're down. But I mean, the hope is, and I think that this is like where there's the assumption, is that like that incentive to cooperate on the balance will be enough. But I think it kind of becomes like you know, you probably know this, one of my favorite, you know, words or pairs of words to use is exogenous versus endogenous behaviors. Like the exogenous behavior to this thing is like I lost my key and no amount of like me having an incentive to get it is going to get it from the bottom of the ocean floor. You know, it's like it's gone. Or, you know, I lost my phone or whatever. So I think that that's where like it's not clear to me that like you're not going to be able to create an endogenous behavior to cooperate if like the overwhelming exogenous behavior is like people just like losing access.
So I guess I'm kind of running out of things to talk about, except my drunken space is crashing last night because I just kind of want to crap on cross input signature aggregation a little bit here.
You don't like it, or what's the deal?
It's not that I don't like it. I would really love to have it, but I think that in a way kind of similar to Dandelion, that it might introduce a whole like bunch of issues for the mempool that might just spiral in terms of complexity. Like
Yeah, well, do you want me to upset you?
I guess.
So, as far as I understand, like cross input signature aggregation, like for the most part, really only works when you're all signing the same TXID, right? So, how would that work if you have flexible sig hash bundles for any prev out in L2?
Oof.
I don't see a way of like squaring those two things. I think that like it ends up like I think that CISA ends up really being something that like works well when you're doing transactions that like originate entirely from your own wallet, and then it works pretty poorly when it's like any sort of protocol or other thing. And then if that's the case, then like you might it might be like a big privacy leak if you're using it or not.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's shitty. But like let's just assume CISA in a vacuum and no more flexible sig hashes. But yeah, like naturally what that's going to do is incentivize everybody to coin join everything and like not even care about privacy properties. Like it'll be a huge efficiency gain for like coin join specifically trying to create anonymity set. But I think absolutely, in that environment, people will also coin join who just don't give a shit about privacy or anonymity set. They just want the maximum fee saving bundles. So how does that look in the mempool when I can be a giant jackass and go around to all the different coordinators facilitating that and put the same input in and just, haha, only one of these can confirm? Now all of a sudden that becomes incredibly complex in terms of being able to like DDoS the mempool, yeah, DDoS these coordinators and what they have to pay attention to. And it's like, doesn't that kind of create a shit show there?
Yeah, and like one of the alternatives would be that like you assign all the transactions in like first groups of two, then groups of four, then, you know, so on and so forth. And but then that ruins your privacy because you can kind of see, you know, maybe the amounts coming out or whatever. But that would be one sort of solution, which is like everybody would always be signing multiple, but you would be like, you know, maybe signing it so that naturally if like one person breaks, you'd still like find a valid transaction. But yeah, the behavior might be that you get burned. The thing that I have like maybe some apprehensive, you know, faith in is that what you could do is you could require everybody to sign with the same nonce. And then if there's a standard protocol like nonce that everybody gets required to sign with, maybe based on like the current block or something like that in your key, you need some zero knowledge proof around it as well. But you could make it so that if you ever participated in two protocols, it would leak your key, which would be like kind of a bad thing. So okay, that would be like one way that you could disincentivize it.
That would be okay. Yeah. And then that and would then, immediately and then, be and then in the mempool. Of those,
and well, then, neither of those transactions would be in the mempool. And then if both of those, if miners saw both of them, then they would evict you from both of those transactions and just steal your coins. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that would be
that,
like,
that
the,
could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be something that like maybe miners could, we could write the code for that, like if they ever see a key that signs the same thing with the same nonce, then they, but I don't know how cross input signature aggregation works in terms of nonces. That I'm not sure about.
Yeah, that, me either really. But yeah, if something like that could potentially be done, that would be great. Because I've kind of just been quietly the corner Wojak, just like no one's thinking about how this opens up DDoS vectors.
Yeah, I mean, I would say one thing you could do that would be reasonable is like current block height and a like out of band of the transaction. Maybe you sign the current block height or block hash with or something that, you know, like, you know, external, but you sign it with a zero knowledge proof, you know, that you are committing to this thing. And then that means that, okay, here's what you sign. It's like you sign the like every 100th block, right? So that's the expiry time for these transactions or something like that. You have to sign the block from like 100 ago, but like, you know, it's fixed at like on the 100 striations or whatever. You sign something that's zero knowledge derived from that, and then you sign with that nonce the transaction that you're intending to be a part of. And then if you try to do more than one transaction per day with that output, then you get your key burned. That would be something that would like maybe help solve that, but it's kind of aggressive. Like maybe people wouldn't want to do that. But that's a thing where like it's kind of like, why wouldn't you want to do that unless you've got something to hide, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like unless you're going to cheat, you would be okay with doing that because you don't plan on double spending.
Yeah, because it's like that just opens up like way too many issues in the mempool, in my opinion, without solving for that. Like somebody can just costlessly reuse the same input to be spamming transactions into the mempool that are all conflicting. So like everything but one is like, why is it in there? It can't confirm. And like the more coordinators you have for doing that, the bigger of a problem it gets for them to detect that and like preemptively replace and like splice out a malicious party, because now all the coordinators have to be aware of all the other coordinators and watch the whole mempool. And like that could even potentially, like depending on the fees paid, that could lead to things on the low end getting evicted by all of these pointless transactions where only one of them will confirm.
Yeah. I think if you did what I said and then you set a like one or two block sequence lock on the entire transaction, I think that would be something that would probably weed out a lot of the cheating, because then you'd have this big risk if you cheated of having your coins swiped.
Well, I'd say certainty if that became widely adopted, because like what miner on earth wouldn't look for that?
Yeah, I don't know if you can include it in the transaction. No, that depends on how cross-input signature aggregation gets implemented. If you have a unique nonce per person and it's just the signature, or if you have, if you need to sign a message externally, and then it would be up to the pool operators to have their own gossip network or thing about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's a good problem to think about. I should probably write up that as like a concept somewhere.
It would be valuable to have floating around, because yeah, I see lots of tribal shouting over what is the next fork.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's I think that you know, I can't, you know, too strongly say that the code that I reviewed and wrote is like done. Other people have to make that claim, but definitely in terms of like mergeability and timeline, from my point of view, like check template verify is like doable, and like the code and specification haven't changed since like, I don't know, like January 2020. So it's been like pretty stable in that regard. So if it's something that people want, it's like, it is, I feel like a doable upgrade. Whereas I feel the other things that people are talking about are still much more heavily in the like needs review and conceptual design work phases. But you know, that's obviously biased by my perspective of like having stared at this thing, you know, for the last 2 years.
Well, I mean, you kind of got my head there at this point, especially thinking that like APO isn't like, it's not general enough to be solving all of those issues. And like, if we're going to start tinkering with sig hash flags, like let's at least do it right.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, at least for me, is like, I agree that we could come up with a better like covenant opcode. I think that like, it would probably, if you were to come up with one today, it would probably take at least like 2 or 3 years for it to get like ready and merged. And if that's the timeline, and like we could do check template verify today, to me it's just like, okay, well, like why don't we just do it today? It'll take a while before like the software to like use it is even ready to go, and then that will just help accelerate the quality of tooling and software support for this kind of stuff long term anyways. It doesn't seem to me like there's any big benefit in like waiting until we get something even better. Even if you do out the like, well, we only have so many like opnops and stuff like that, it's like by the time we consumed all of those at the pace that we're going, like we're all going to be dead anyways. So it's not like something I'm like too worried about.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep on adding more too. You know, there's like new Tapleaf versions, and it's like, okay, yep. I think we have like plenty of upgrade space. I'm not like too worried about using an opcode.
Yeah. I mean, like Honestly, I don't get that side of the argument at all at this point, because with like witness versioning, like you literally don't need like any of the other OpNops except for things that you explicitly want to do, like bare script, at this point.
There's way too many ways to upgrade. Like, you know how op success works?
No.
So in a Tapleaf version, which is I guess like only the only one that's defined right now, if you use one of these op success X's, then it means that your script is entirely undefined.
So like literally
So
just pass no matter what.
yeah, pretty much. Like it's like from consensus, it's like, okay, like we'll accept any witness if you have one of these in your script. So if like anywhere in your script, so it could be like buried somewhere in like some like ifs and elses or whatever, just the presence of that opcode being parsed means that the entire script is uninterpreted. So we have like, I don't know, like 10 of them, and they're each 256 bytes. Or no, they're each I guess they're each 1 byte, but like that means that there's like 10 combinations of them that are like completely undefined. And so you have 10 factorial different versions that you could do just without even changing the leaf version.
Okay.
I mean,
Yeah.
obviously for like ergonomic reasons, you probably wouldn't want to use all 10 factorial of those versions, but it's just like the upgrade ability, and then that's not even using a leaf version. Then you've got, you know, another I forget how many leaf versions there are, but I think it's like 128 different leaf versions. And then you've got still another like, you know, 15 plus SegWit versions or whatever. And you, it's just like me. It's like, okay, I'm not losing any sleep over burning an opcode. Especially also if you look at check template verify, the way I implemented it, the only arguments that are interpreted is when it is a 32 byte thing off the stack. Everything else is uninterpreted. So like if you came up with some future semantic for it, like all of that from like 0 to I guess 520 bytes is like the maximum stack argument. All of that is still undefined. So like you could add whatever other applications you want.
I mean, like at this point, like I just don't ever see myself supporting another covenant scheme. And like, you know, to be honest, like I'm a little nervous sometimes when I look at Lightning developers start talking about covenant schemes and just looking for like more and more generalized schemes. And it's like I don't really know what to fully make of that, 'cause like I just don't, one, have the time, and like two, a
Yeah.
real deep enough understanding to be able to fully parse out a lot of those discussions, because it's a lot of just publicly quick inferences or implications about things all built around like undocumented things, like private conversations. And it's so
Yep.
like I don't know how to parse like how far down that spectrum of generalization like different developers are trying to go. And like I will not support in any fucking circumstance something I think that goes far enough down that spectrum to be globally dangerous.
Yeah, so I think that that's also another area where like the approach with check template verify kind of shines, which is that I agree if we came up with like a perfect generalized covenant scheme, and then we said, okay, it's now going to be like a soft fork on mainnet, is just like a huge change to what's possible in Bitcoin, like really gargantuan, and it's all at once, and we won't have built out any of the expertise and understanding and even the basics of it before we do it, right? So from my perspective, it's like, yeah, if we come up with something more complicated, it's just going to be like way more of a sell in order to like be sure that we actually fully understand it. Whereas check template verify from my perspective is like very conceptually simple and kind of like provably so. You can really look at all the cases of what you're able to do with it. You know, at least from like a like transactions on chain perspective, and get pretty comfortable with that. And then if we like put that out on the network, then we can get years and years of like experience using it and figuring out areas where it doesn't quite do what we want, and then either come up with like limited covenants that address those use cases, or when we go and do the generalized thing, it will be informed by like what we've actually learned with like real world experience rather than like armchair, you know, like hypothecating. And so I think that that's where, like, I think that there would be a lot of value in, even if we think in the future there might be something better than Check Template Verify, that we take the opportunity to like build out experience with writing smart contracts for Bitcoin with something that we know to be like relatively safe and simple.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's like, I honestly will never support generalized covenants. And like, if there is a push for those, I will personally view that as an attack on Bitcoin. Like, that's the difference, to like go all the way back to the start of this, like the whole path in the forest analogy. Like, OpsCTV, yeah, and
I
general,
think that's fine.
But it's like, metaphorically.
Well, one thing that you could do, for example, would be like, you could require that like every covenant has like also two signatures with like the taproot key on it as well, which would prove to you that it is in no way a like, you know, it's something that somebody knows what the key is for that. Like, that would be one thing that like maybe you could do.
I still can't like get myself there. It's like the difference between opening a door and seeing the path in the forest where you know all the different places it can go versus opening the door to the Twilight Zone and who the fuck knows where that's going to go or what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I guess one point that I would make, which I think, you know, you might find compelling, is that if you think about Bitcoin, like holistically, like there's like a billion different ways that like Bitcoin could die and like stop working. And that's just like one of them. I think where it becomes a game of like trade-offs is like, for example, if Bitcoin is just like really struggling for maybe like fee reasons or, you know, scalability or something like that, and then that seems to be the way that like Bitcoin isn't going to die, like I'd rather have Bitcoin like exist than not exist. And I think that that's something that like, you know, maybe if there's like a really active like threat that you think that covenants would be solving, that threat is worse than the threat that you're thinking of right now, like maybe that's a universe where you would want them.
I mean, maybe potentially, like, yeah, every time I talk to people like you actually building shit in this space, like I learn a lot more, I fill in gaps, and half the time I have like preconceived notions of how things interact broken. But it's, I still just, I can't stop that inherent skepticism of everything. And like, what can I piece together globally with what I do understand now? And like this, the whole concept of general covenants just give me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, I think it's a fair concern to have, and it's definitely something, you know, there's a reason why, like, as like a like covenants maximalist, let's call myself, like there's a reason why the thing that I actually like pitched for being on the network is like the most limited form possible of it that's still useful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, honestly, I would be okay if we got OpsCTV and fixing sig hash flags and things just ossified from there, because the composability of everything you can build with CTV plus a state management solution that kind of solves the fee paying problem, like that right there, I can see ways to scale self-sovereign Bitcoin like to a massive fraction of the planet right now, whereas right now it's like, well, what type of custodian with what kind of trust model do you want?
Yeah, exactly. It makes me sick.
It doesn't make me sick. I still see potential in things like, you know, what's going on in El Zante with Galoy. Like, that's a like little community-ran microbank. And like, if things froze right now, like there's still massive potential in that. But like,
yeah, that's fair. I just suffer for like knowing like, when like people ask me like, oh, like what setup should I have, that I can't recommend like for most people like that many of the self-sovereign things based on like whenever they tell me like what their concerns are and what their threat model is. And like, I think that that's something that like Bitcoin, you know, can and should do better on. Mm-hmm. And it's not really even necessarily like a technology problem, because for Ethereum, it's like they have all the technology that they would need to do this stuff. It's like really like a social problem that like we don't prioritize it in the right way, because like Ethereum doesn't have it either, and they could, you know, but they don't have like the most maxed out self-sovereign stuff. I think that's something that, like, as we, you know, want to keep Bitcoin differentiated, like those are things that we need to focus on.
Mm-hmm. You know, like one thing that people constantly say in this space that I think is absurd, or at least imply it, is that like Bitcoin solved the problem of key management. Like, no, it didn't. It just created the biggest incentive ever to solve it. But like, yeah, how people like manage and store and handle the access controls to their Bitcoin, that is not a solved problem.
Not at all. Anything else that you want to get into?
I think I've kind of burnt myself out, honestly.
Fair enough. Well, thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate, you know, getting to actually talk rather than just tweeting angstily at one another.
Mm-hmm. You know, one last thing I'd like to get into. So what exactly does my CIA benefits package entail?
Just like standard fare, like a meter by meter by meter cubic brick of $100 bills, like a couple kilos of cocaine, and never any culpability on our end if you get caught with any of it. So that's all you got to stick to, and you'll be okay.
Well, those listening live in the audience, we're going to have a party. Yeah, you know, thank you, Jeremy, for coming on and actually talking through all this shit. Like, I really feel like everybody in this space needs to start driving like these deeper conversations about the engineering side of things, like more to the public forefront, because like it there really is just so much shit that you have to figure out to get to the learning curve, or point on the learning curve, where you can really start trying to assess these things yourself. And like over the years, it's overwhelming. Like, I feel like people have just been more and more giving up on trying to do that beyond the surface level.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's an important mission of like education and outreach that like people understand fully, like the implications of like the way that the protocol is changing. And honestly, I think that that's probably the argument for ossification that I find like most compelling, is that the people who are in positions to like advocate these things, like maybe like are like having less and less understanding of the actual protocol.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I feel myself at over the last couple of years. Like, I used to think that I had a very solid grasp of everything going on. And like more and more the last year or two, I just keep stumbling on new shit or things I hadn't thought about in this way, or when did that happen or get proposed? And like, yeah, I consider myself an autist that obsesses over this space, and I'm getting to that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, hope
when,
everybody...
when do we add you to utxos.org/signals?
Well, I guess I can go dig out my 2FA and hop on GitHub to make a PR.
Awesome, looking forward to it.
Yeah, you know, I hope everybody enjoyed this, and thanks again for your time, Jeremy.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Adios. Hele halvers nens i min løy. Måsner, det seng et kjøsson trød. Ingen fortsatt rett i sidene. Jeg snir i de slåk når jeg har.